Joining us right now, my good buddy, fellow Bergen County guy, does a great job covering sports, writing sports columnists for the New York Post, and that's Mike Vaccaro. Mike, how are you? How are you holding up?
I'm doing okay, Joe. The question I have is, do you actually miss the pain? Right?
Do I miss the pain of my teams? Is that what you're saying?
That's what I'm asking. Maybe wouldn't you prefer to have the pain be omnipresent in your life again as opposed to what we've got now?
Yeah, yes. I mean, there's no question about it. We should be into the Mets season. We should be into the, I think this was regional final weekend in the NCAA tournament. We should be into all that. But unfortunately, that's not happening right now. We got to deal with it as it is.
That's true. And that's the thing. The people I've talked to, so many times, people who write me about who are sports fans. They swear that, if sports ever comes back, they're never going to take them for granted again. And I actually believe that, because I think I actually got a desperate email from somebody who's a Mets fan who said, I would have given anything to watch Edwin Diaz go on stage yesterday. And I'm like, well, you say that now.
Right. Yes. Yeah, until Diaz is blowing saves, right? Yeah, no question. But the Mets usually win on opening day is usually like they're dominant on opening day, Mike, as you know. The Mets usually win opening day.
Yeah, they're like the equivalent of the 27 Yankees on every opening day.
Yeah, they really are. Let me ask you this. How has it been for you? I mean, you're it's a little different for me. We're on the Evan and I on the air every day, and we've done a lot as far as classic games and old games and all the stuff I've seen since I started following sports in really 1961 is the first full year I started really following sports, and I got I've been fortunate enough to see the evolution of just about everything. I mean, the NFL, all of that. But right now, on a regular basis, how do you find it as far as you having to write columns right now?
Well, it's interesting, Joe. I find that there's a real balance that I got to strike. I mean, look, on one level, I really believe that I can offer a 5-minute respite to anybody who comes across my column during the course of the day. Everybody's doom surfing 23 hours a day, and if you stumble upon a sports column like I've written in the past couple of weeks about the Iditarod or about the 1950 CCNY team, it kind of just takes your mind off things.
Right.
I find that to be I think that's part of my kind of my assist to the cause. But you also got to remember that you work for a newspaper and the news of the day is this pandemic, and so there's also been a couple of columns I've written about high school seniors who have lost their final year of high school, which is terrible. And, about opening day, which never was. I actually took a drive around my family's old hometown of Corona, which is a place that when I was going to Mets games as a kid, we used to, make the tour. We'd go to the Lemon Ice King before the game, go to the game, and then afterward we'd go to the Parkside restaurant. And it's just so quiet. We'd see the old men playing bocce in Spaghetti Park, and, there's nobody playing anything in Spaghetti Park. There's nobody in Spaghetti Park. So, it's a balance, but, to a degree, Joe, it's actually almost like going back to my roots as a young newspaper man where, I wasn't in New York, so I didn't always have a game to be able to use the crutch if I needed it. I mean, I always kind of had to come up with ideas independent of actual games sometimes, if that makes sense, even as a sports writer. And so that's what you do. It's amazing. We're lucky because sports really is an incredible tapestry producing a lot of story ideas. It's why you guys can talk sports every day for 365 days a year. And if I had to, I could probably write 365 columns a year because there's something you can latch on to. It's just maybe not quite as easy or as obvious these days because you got to kind of, put your thinking cap on and come up with something that might be interesting to talk about.
Let me ask you this because this is, as I said, regional final weekend in the NCAA tournament. And, we've been running a lot of these classic games, Mike. I think tonight, as a matter of fact, I think tonight we have the 2010 NCAA title game, that great game between Butler and Duke with Haywood hitting the rim from 75 feet at the
incredible
end.
Game.
And then, to me, the greatest championship game of all time. I still, you could talk about Villanova, Georgetown, or NC State and Houston and all of that, whatever. The greatest championship game I ever saw was the 82 game between North Carolina and Georgetown, Ewing against Jordan. And, of course, being a Knick fan, little did I know that this was going to be a really kind of a portent of what I was going to have to deal with going forward once they both got into the NBA. But to me, and we're replaying that game tonight as well. That to me is the greatest championship game ever. And I don't know how you feel about that, but give me your thoughts maybe on that game and what you think was, you know, your that one game for you in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, that was a nice sneak preview for everybody about what Michael Jordan was capable of, right? In terms of
he was going to beat my team and Ewing all the years.
And Ewing, right? You and Patrick, he was going to torture you and Patrick all the years.
Yep.
You know what's interesting is I was 15 in 1982, and we were our hero for a lot of us who played basketball growing up on Long Island was Matt Daugherty.
Right,
he was a sophomore
right.
in that team. So,
right.
you know, most of us were St. John's fans, but our second team for 4 years was Carolina because of Daugherty. Because he was one of us, and, you know, he played, you know, playgrounds. We went to see him play.
And a lot of New York guys over the years had gone to Carolina, too.
Right,
a lot of them.
Right. And, you know, so it's really funny when I talk, but, when, you know, when you talk to other people from other parts of the country, people talk about that game and the Michael Jordan game. And, you know, for me, it's the Matt Daugherty game because you got a chance to win the national championship. But I do remember that. And look, even then, like Georgetown had kind of almost been, I hate the word, but almost demonized because
yes.
they were the,
yeah.
you know, they kind of wore the black hats. They were yeah. they were the tough guys. They were the
Hoya paranoia.
Hoya paranoia was alive and well. And, of course, I look back in retrospect in that game, and it's incredible that Patrick Ewing was a freshman. And I think the first, like, 12 or 14 points Carolina scored were because Thompson basically said, you know, swat everything.
Yep,
and so
yep.
he got like 5 or 6 goals
yep.
that started the game. And you look back on that game, and, you know, if Fred Brown doesn't have, you know, one of the most unfortunate, you know, lapses in basketball history, I mean, you know, who knows if Dean Smith ever wins a championship, which is hard to fathom when you consider who Dean Smith was. But of course it all crystallizes in that moment when you realize that Michael Jordan is also a freshman.
Yep.
And he not only takes the shot, but he makes it, and it looks like the most natural thing in the world. Of course, we've now got a lifetime of Michael Jordan memory, so every time he takes that shot, it looks perfectly natural that it's going in. But I do remember watching in my living room floor and thinking to myself, why is he taking the shot? You got James Worthy. Why is Michael Jordan taking a shot? Oh, okay, good shot.
Yeah.
But I do remember. Yeah, I think for a lot of people, Joe, I think that was the game that really kind of crystallized what the NCAA finals are going to be. You know, we were used to it at that time. You'll know this better than anybody. At that point, you know, every Super Bowl was a blowout. It was, you know, we went 10 or 15 years.
No question.
Without a great Super Bowl, and conversely, that kind of started a run of really good NCAA tournament finals, where you had that, you had obviously Carolina State, you had Villanova, you had Syracuse and Indiana.
Yep.
So it's you know, that really, it almost became a, you know, something you rely upon, was that no matter what, the NCAA final was always going to be a great game.
Yeah.
And that really kind of started it.
Yeah, no, and there's no doubt about it. That was a tremendous basketball game. There's no question about that. Do you have one for you, though, that sticks out, Mike? You got one game that you say, you know, this is the one that kind of jumps out at me as far as it doesn't even have to be a championship game, but just, you know, in the tournament itself.
You know what? The one that really, if I could watch it over and over again, it would probably be the UMBC-Virginia game. Especially because we have the context now that Virginia actually bounced back from that
and won the championship. Yeah.
So to me, that makes it even better, because now you don't have to look at Virginia as some kind of like sympathetic,
right,
tortured
right.
character. And look, I mean, I get it. I mean, maybe that's not quite as great a memory as if Princeton would have beaten Georgetown or if some of those other near misses would have happened. But I just remember watching that. And the thing that you have to remember is it wasn't like they wanted a miracle shot to buzzer. They won by 20 points. When a 16-1 finally, after so many opportunities, it was a 20-point blowout. And it was just this, you know, to me, I mean, I think one of the things we love about the tournament, what we love about the sport, is that there really is always an element of, you know what, the little guy can beat the big guy. And that really kind of embodied it. And it proves, you know, we keep wondering over and over again if that's ever going to happen. There's always been this notion that there's two tournaments. And the tournament that happens on the first Thursday and Friday, when you get a lot of 5-12 upsets, you get a couple of, you know, 3-14s or whatever. But it always seems that the tournament kind of shakes itself out properly by the second weekend, and you always get the better team. You know, that was really, you know, kind of an indication that it's not only about the 5-12, that you really can. There really is a David and Goliath element to it. And you know, you mentioned earlier that Duke Butler game. I mean, how many times would you watch that game when it comes on and you think to yourself, "Oh, just go down once, that last shot."
Oh my God. Right.
You know, because it came, and that's what's absurd. That came so close to ending not just with Butler as a national championship, national champions, but winning on a three-quarter court shot. I mean, Hollywood would reject that ending 100 times out of 100. But
yeah.
Unfortunately, we didn't get the bounce in the role that we probably all wanted. At least those of us who didn't go to Duke.
Yeah. Well, and then Butler, of course, went back the next year and couldn't make a shot against UConn in that championship.
Unbelievable. Yeah, if they were to play the game against the UConn, they played against Duke, they would have won by 10 or 15 points. But, that was really an incredible final, too, because both those teams, UConn, I think that was the 11th game in a row UConn won.
Right,
All of them elimination games. I mean, that's really kind of, you'll never see anything like that again, I don't think.
Yeah, Kemba Walker was unbelievable. Talking to the great Mike Vaccaro of the New York Post. The one thing that we do have going, Mike, we had the NFL free agency, we're going to have the draft. And to me, I had Gary Myers on, and the most fascinating story going into hopefully we have a full NFL season is going to be Brady in Tampa, and what does Belichick do now in New England without Brady? What's your overall thoughts on that?
I am more confident that Belichick will be able to maintain what he's got as opposed to Brady. Now, I'm not saying that Brady's not going to do well, but I just think Brady was great, and there is going to be that intrigue as to whether either one of those guys can win without the other. But obviously, with Belichick has, I think, to me, travels. Brady's got to rely on too many other elements. I mean, that was a middling team, mediocre team. Yes, it was obviously screaming out for a quarterback because Jameis Winston was so unreliable last year. I'm just not sure. We tend to unfairly include Joe Montana in the list of these like quarterbacks who wound up their careers in weird looking uniforms.
Right. He played well though for Kansas City.
But he played well, right. And that was a good team that he joined. So the notion back in those days, well, this is a good team that's been lacking a quarterback. Let's bring an all time quarterback in and see what we can do. And that happened. And they still weren't good enough. They were still a flawed team. And were never able to make that final leap. Although they came close in his first year. I see a lot of that happening with Brady. I can see the Bucks being obviously a lot more entertaining team this year. Going to be more successful team. I mean, I just think that they're going to run into the standard NFC buzzsaws and aren't going to be quite as good no matter how well Brady plays. Whereas I can see, I could see in New England where the Belichick mystique would almost be, worth a couple of extra victories in the course of a year that they might not get. And plus, I'm just not sold on the rest of the division yet. I mean, I know all three teams have gotten better. I mean, in various degrees. And I know people seem to be in love with the Bills right now. But until a team takes that division away from the Patriots, I don't care who the quarterback is, as long as Belichick's there. To me, I need to see that before I declare that dead.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And, a lot of people think he's going to go with Jarrett Stidham as his quarterback. You buy that? I mean, well, how do you see that playing out?
I guess, to me, this is probably, if you think about Belichick, I mean, this is probably what he's secretly hoped for years, is being able to actually, do a Belichick thing here, which is to say, it's hard to predict what he's ever going to do with anything, whether you're watching him during the course of the game or during this part, we're trying to map the strategy for what he's going to have coming back next year. So I would be reluctant to guess anything he's going to do until he actually does it, because that just seems to be, who he is. But also, I mean, this is the kind of puzzle he's wanted to be able to put together for a lot of years. And it's going to be interesting to watch. I mean, it's so different. I know you have this relationship with him in terms of the way you view him, Joe. I think a similar way I have is that, well, you just can't stand the idea that these folks are so successful. You're just awed by how successful he is. And so I believe he's capable of anything. And, maybe I've given him too much credit over the years, and I guess we'll see that in the next couple of months. But I'm fascinated to see what he's going to do in terms of getting that team ready to defend what their 30-time championship is, the AFC East champion.
Yeah, to me, I've seen him all from Lombardi on up, and to me, he's the best coach ever. I mean, you have to say that. 9 Super Bowls, 6 championships, in the free agency era, no less, is just remarkable what he's been able to do. Really is.
You know, in every one of those Super Bowls, they weren't exactly blowouts. So
no,
it wasn't like he was
no.
able to kind of cruise no. in the second half. I mean, now, did he get lucky a couple times? Okay, he got lucky. Did he put his team in position to get lucky? I think that's probably the more accurate way to describe it.
Well, Seattle's the one. I mean, the most lucky yeah. one was Seattle. I mean, they should have lost that game. Pete Carroll, what is he thinking?
But they didn't. You know, when
right.
I don't know if it was a Jedi mind trick or what, but, you know, when a play had to be made, and it was either Pete Carroll's team or Bill Belichick's team, it was Pete Carroll's team that did it.
Right.
And I think we're going to enjoy and glorify what the Giants did more and more as time goes by, when you realize that they didn't just do it once, they did it twice, in terms of knocking them off and actually taking something away from him, which I know still bothers him. And, you know, I think that's a reason why a lot of Giants fans were actually rooting for the Patriots against the Eagles a couple of years ago, because they wanted to be known as the only team that ever was able to figure out Bill Belichick. But you know what? As time goes by, the fact that they did it twice, I think, is going to be something that's really going to heighten and only become more important to people as we look back on that.
Not only that, but they beat his best team. I mean, let's be honest, the 2007 team. You know, it's funny, when the NFL Network did their top 100 list of the greatest teams of all time, the only team in the top 10 that didn't win with their championship was the 07 Patriots. And,
right.
you know, I actually agree with that, Mike.
Sure. Oh, I do too. I mean, you forget what that team was like, because it wasn't that they were beating teams, but they made a point of rolling it up on everybody and kind of, you know, they reveled in being the big bullies of the league in that year. And it's funny, I was doing some research on that team, and I was going back to some of the stuff I was writing in the days before that Super Bowl, and it was, I mean, there was such an inevitability to it. I mean, I think in New York we were so delighted the Giants had made it that far. And we knew they would probably be representative because they had a bunch of proud veterans and they mm-hmm. played them well in Week 17 and all of that.
Right.
But
right.
there was just an inevitability to it. Like, how in the world is this team going to lose? It wasn't so much what the Giants were going to do; it was what the Patriots were going to do, because they just had not shown any kind of weakness. And you know, it's funny. I mean, you wonder what would have happened if that game, if there were games to follow that game, if other teams were able to follow the Giants' blueprint, and if that would have mattered, or was just the fact that the Giants played a perfect game and happened to run into the Patriots when they were playing a B game as opposed to their usual A-plus game.
I also thought that the pressure started getting to them with the undefeated stuff. I mean, they didn't play a great, even though they beat the Chargers in that championship game when Phillip Rivers played on one leg and Tomlinson basically didn't play, you kind of got the feeling that they were starting to feel it a little bit. You know what I mean,
right.
Mike?
Yeah, and I do, and it's funny. I mean, you know, I don't think that you're connected, but, you know, for people like us, they could be connected if you want to try and play games like this. But you wonder if that didn't actually help, you know, Jets fans have a nice little two-year enjoyment on the first years of Rex Ryan, because remember, one of the reasons they were able to get to the AFC Championship game the first time is because the Colts laid down.
Yes, thank you very much.
In Week 16. And I've always been convinced that was a direct result of them seeing what had happened to the Patriots. And the team-wide thing was, well, you know, if we win the game, we win the game, but we're not going to make it, you know, priority number one, because we saw what happens when that becomes a story, as opposed to trying to just maintain and win a championship. So I guess the Jets were kind of like indirect beneficiaries of that game, at least for a little while.
Yeah, and of course got to beat them in with the second greatest win in the history of the franchise, maybe the third.
Yeah.
I give the AFL title game in 68 probably second. When they beat the Patriots in that divisional playoff game. Mike, it is always a pleasure, man. We got to play golf once we're able to do that again. We got to get out.
Absolutely.
How are you physically? You physically all right? You doing all right physically?
We're getting there, Joe. I mean, one of the things, you know, I've taken advantage of the last couple of weeks to try and kind of, you know, recalibrate a little bit. I do feel I feel as good, ironically, in this time as I have in a long time. So hopefully we both feel that way over the course of the next couple of weeks and months. We can get out there. That'd be fun.
Mike, always a pleasure, man. My best to you and the family and all of that. Be safe, be well, and we'll talk to you soon, all right? The great Mike Vaccaro.
Stay safe, Joe. Thanks so much for having me on.
You got it. The great Mike Vaccaro.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.